I'm Julia Pastel. This is the Colin McEnroe Show. Colin's out today because he was carrying the Olympic torch to Rio and he tore his hamstring and he couldn't limp back in here in time. So sad. So we're going to talk today about the role of the understudy, the standby, the fill-in, the backup. That's me. So I'm here in the studio hanging out all alone. All our guests are by phone today. So like any good understudy, I basically have no idea what's going on. Let me paint a picture for you. I'm surrounded by chairs. There's mics. I have an iPad, paper everywhere. I have a phone board with like one call on it. And I can see the producer, the senior producer, and the sound engineers through a series of glass walls. And these are the people I do not want to let down. They're all waving at me. I'm imagining all the different ways I can screw this up, including accidentally saying something a lot worse than screw on live radio and letting down all the very nice people here who I believe I can do an okay job being Colin. I have all the recommendations on how to be him. I think I've got to laugh at my own jokes, not stare menacingly into anyone's eyes, overpronounce the word tweet, but it is also totally possible that I'll find new, untested ways to fail. And I'm sure the rabid Colin McEnroe fans are at this very moment throwing tomatoes at their radios. Ah! And yet, the show must go on. So as they say in the biz, WNPR is giving me a shove with love. This show is going to be awesome. I did some power poses. I remembered I'm a professional improviser. I memorized the blocking, which is only to just sit in this chair the whole time. And so let's do this. Okay, so later in the show, we'll talk to Audrey Levine, a performer who's covered roles in some legendary Broadway productions. And we'll talk to Elizabeth Nearing from the Long Wharf Theater in New Haven. She's not an actress, but she's got a great story of a time when she was called into service as an accidental understudy. But we'll get started, though, with Danielle Doherty. Hi, Danielle. Are you still with me?
I'm still with you. Hi.
Yes.
Thanks for having me.
1 minute, still alive. So Danielle works in theater administration on Broadway, and she's a co-runner of @understudies, a Twitter account, which is so much fun. And she joins us from NPR Studios in New York City. How are you, Danielle?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm great. So
you're doing great so far.
Oh, my God. Thank you. Well, you would know because you're the biggest understudy fan we found. So can you tell us how you got into this understudy fan world and Twitter account? And yeah, tell us all about that. What's your origin story?
Sure. So I grew up in a small town in Virginia. I'd always been a fan of Broadway. My mom was born and raised in New York, would take us up here to come see shows, fell in love with that way. And when I was growing up, that was sort of when the internet community was coming up and you could find people that had similar interests. And I found a lot of people on the internet who loved Broadway. And I would come up and see shows with them and things like that. And through that group, I met Shoshana Feinstein and Karen Marshall, who are the founders of Broadway Understudies. And we would go to concerts together here in the city that would feature understudies of shows. And one day they just told me they really wanted to create a place where you could find out when your favorite understudy was going to go on. Because as huge fans of theater, we've seen shows quite a few times. So seeing a new interpretation of a role in a show was always really interesting to us. So they started the website Broadway Understudies in 2007. And since then, it's kind of gone more to Twitter because that serves us our format a lot better. We also have concerts, our half-hour concert series, where we feature a lot of Broadway current and former understudies. So it's expanded since then, but I've always been a huge fan of Broadway and a huge fan of understudies.
So can you explain to our listeners who maybe aren't in New York and don't see shows hundreds of times, what is the appeal? What is the appeal of following understudies? What's exciting or impressive to you about their skill set?
I think understudies are so amazing and are not really as treasured as other actors, maybe lead actors, because some of them aren't on stage every night. Swings, for example, aren't on stage each night. They just go on when they're covering a track. For understudies specifically that are in the ensemble and also go on, they have to know their track as well as somebody else's track and be ready to go on in a split second. Swings know up to like 14 tracks, and they can go on in what's called a split track, which is doing the most important parts of some of the roles. And sometimes they even go on for a different gender. Having that skill set and being able to use that skill set incredibly quickly is just absolutely fascinating to me.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I do want to get deep into that in a little bit. So I guess one more thing is, like, what qualities do you think it takes to be a great understudy? What kind of people are the best understudies?
I think the kind of people that are best understudies is probably very organized people, knowing where you have to be at a certain moment in the show, also being able to work on your feet, both metaphorically and literally, changing your role if you're doing a split track, just knowing where to be, or having being a good coworker to your cast so they can, as you said, shove with love and know where you're supposed to be and help pull off that show.
Awesome. Well, this is all great in theory, but let's talk to a real understudy. Real live with us, we have Julie Eicher. Julie, are you still there?
I'm here. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yes, I'm two for two. Very good.
So far.
Julie is currently performing in the touring production of The Phantom of the Opera as the member of the Corps de Ballet and Ensemble, and she's understudying the supporting role of Meg Geary. She joins us from Washington, D.C., where she's performing at the Kennedy Center, which is amazing. So, Julie, we heard that you just went on as Meg last week. Is that true? Tell us the story.
Yeah, it's been great. I actually just got bumped up to being an understudy. One of our dancers left the tour to go join the American in Paris tour, and the role of the understudy got passed on to me. So I just had my put-in rehearsal this past Friday. And it was a little terrifying, but it was great. It went really well. Yeah.
So I'm so glad that you said put in rehearsal, because I'm so curious. So what is the process like, and what exactly is a put in rehearsal? How do you prepare in one day or 2 days or an hour to jump on stage?
Well, so basically I had a couple days of rehearsal spread out over about 2 weeks. And I got kind of lucky in this track, because I already know all of the ballet choreography and didn't have to do, too much learning of brand new material. That being said, I, had to figure out how to be in a totally different space on stage, being in a totally different relationship to all the other actors and dancers. And so finally, last Friday, I, put on my costumes, I put on a new wig, and made it out on stage. And you kind of have this aha moment, because in rehearsals, you're only there with, maybe one or two directors, mm-hmm. or, the dance captain. And then all of a sudden you have all these bodies around you. So all of a sudden it's sort of starts to make sense, and everything kind of comes together. So actually it was good. It was pretty exciting, I think.
I mean, that's fascinating to me, especially we should define the term tracks, as both of you guys have learned it. So actually, Julie, could you define that for us? What does that mean?
So the interesting thing about, about Broadway productions, Broadway touring productions, is that usually everybody's part is referred to as a track instead of a role, because that's kind of how it works on stage and backstage. It's kind of this machine where everybody has, their own pathway, and they all, we usually hope, work together in a more or less seamless way. So when I came into the show a little over 9 months ago, I replaced one of the dancers and took over her track. So I basically just did everything that she did backstage, on stage, and tried to work my way in without stepping on too many toes.
It seems like, especially for a dancer, and I mean anyone who has to deal with complex blocking, which for the true layman is how you're moving around on stage. With both choreography and blocking, there's so much spatial reasoning and physicality to it that it really blows my mind to think about how you could move even from one dancing position to another from night to night. How does your mind feel when you're moving in a brand new track for the first time?
Well, that's kind of the interesting thing is, in the couple of weeks leading up to, when I finally got to do the role, as I was learning it, every time I would then go on stage at night and do my role in the Corps de Ballet, I would sort of be of two minds. One is doing my choreography as is, and the other is sort of keeping an eye out, keeping my mind partly where Meg would be on stage. So it's a little bit of, a coordination challenge, And as Danielle said, you know, I kind of have nothing to complain about. I'm more in awe of the swings who understudy, you know, 5, 10, 12 roles. So it's a little bit of, you know, a challenge in coordination, I think, mentally, even more than physically.
Yeah, and you must have also worked a lot with other people who are understudying on stage. So can you talk to us a little bit about the relationship between the actors on stage and kind of the subtext of actors and dancers supporting someone who's just out there doing their best?
Well, I think what's kind of nice about having, you know, all these understudies, whether they go on for principal roles or whether the swings are moving up into ensemble tracks, is it kind of keeps it interesting. We're doing, you know, more or less the same show. We hope the same show 8 times a week, 50 to 52 weeks out of the year. And so when we have somebody who steps into the role who doesn't usually do it all, it kind of brings a new life and a new energy to the production, you know, whether they're ensemble or principal. And, you know, as both of you said, the concept to, you know, help these people along is to shove with love. So,
do people actually say that?
You definitely want to persuade people to be in the right place. But it does add like a great energy and sort of like a liveliness to the production.
I think that's so interesting because, you know, I've had friends and I myself have been through the experience as an audience member where you see an understudy or you know, you get that little slip of paper and, you know, there's understudies in the cast. And to the audience who's so trained for TV or whatever, there can be a sense of disappointment or like you're not seeing the real thing. But on the other hand, seeing a live production actually working things out in real time, as you say, is very exciting to see.
Yeah, it's so funny how the audience reaction to understudies is just kind of different from, you know, the reaction to understudies and the regard to understudies that we sort of have in our community. You know, even just the other day, an understudy for Christine, our leading lady, was on, and you hear people, you know, as they're coming out of the theater, you hear them saying, wow, she was great. And even for an understudy, there's sort of this this underlying expectation in the audience, I think, that the understudy is less than, when that's usually not necessarily true. It's just kind of, you know, they might just have a different take on the character. They might be, you know, just another person who is able to do the role, but isn't necessarily doing it those 8 times a week.
Well, I know Danielle appreciates it. So, Danielle, have you seen any great, you know, dance understudies that you can recall in recent memory or, I don't know, non-recent memory that really impressed you with how smoothly they integrated themselves?
I can't really say maybe dance understudies, but I have seen amazing understudies that have just blown me away. When I was growing up, I was a fan of Wicked, like most 14, 15-year-old girls. And I saw Megan Hilty, who's a star in her own right now, go on as Glinda. And she was just absolutely amazing. And I saw the show with the lead at that time and other understudies. But no one really showed off to me what Megan could do in her own right. So I think there are so many understudies that have their own amazing skill sets and own amazing talents that seeing the role portrayed in a different way than maybe the star that's hired to perform that role 8 shows a week might do is a fantastic thing. I mean, understudies are immensely talented in their own right.
Yeah, I saw an understudy for Wicked 2. Idina was not in it, and I was so disappointed, but it turned out the understudy was absolutely amazing. I don't know her name. I don't remember her name. So for me, she's just the character, which is pretty cool, too. Julie, I know you have to go soon, but one last question for you.
Sure.
Can you tell us, if you don't mind talking about this, how the pay situation works? Because it's a job, and yet it changes based on the role you're playing, right?
Right, yeah. So we get, you know, our base ensemble pay, and luckily for somebody who does get an understudy track added on to their normal track, there's a little bit of a pay bump in our weekly salary, but the nice thing is when we do get to go on, we get a portion of that principal salary. So you know, for whenever I go on for Meg, it'll be you know, an eighth of her salary for each show, because it's an eighth of the shows that she would be doing that week.
Sure.
So somebody who is, say, the understudy for Bette Midler when she's, you know, going to Broadway in the next couple months is going to be lucky, because she's going to be raking it in, as they say.
Wow, that is so fascinating. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, Julie, are there any roles that you would love to understudy, either in Phantom of the Opera or something else?
I mean, I've been sort of exploring my voice a little bit more as I have joined this show. I came from ballet companies, from the ballet world, and in more of a recent addition to the musical theater world. So being on tour and being in this show has kind of given me an opportunity to take voice lessons and sing a little bit more. So I would love to get the opportunity to understudy some more singing roles as well as dance roles. Because already, you know, even though Meg is, you know, a smaller role, a supporting role, it's still challenged me in ways that I actually didn't even anticipate, from both the vocal side of things and in acting. So, you know, more roles, more versatile roles, bigger roles. I will try not to be choosy. I'll take what comes my way.
Well, it seems like what you're saying is really cool, because you get to test out a role once in a while, see how you mm-hmm. feel about it, but you're still employed in the production. So it's right. kind of the best of both worlds.
I am. I get to be pretty lucky, and also, you know, keeps things interesting. having a couple different roles in the back of my mind.
It sure and, sounds like it.
Yeah, and it's exciting, you know, when you get to go on for someone else.
Yeah. And you're yeah. also on tour, so the actual physical theater changes every time, too.
That's an interesting challenge. We're pretty lucky because, our set is so enormous, we actually travel with our floor. We travel with a steel floor. Our set is actually so heavy that we need to have a specially reinforced floor to actually support it. So usually the onstage traffic, if you will, doesn't change too much. But there's for every, you know, piece that you see on stage, there's, you know, probably twice as much going on backstage. So that's sort of where the challenge is when we're changing theaters. It's, you know, figuring out those backstage pathways and all of that traffic and, you know, hoping that all works out okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much for talking with us, Julie. We know you
thank
have to
you
get
so
to
much.
Rehearsal.
Yeah, got to get to rehearsal.
That's
work never stops.
Very important. Danielle's going to stay with us, and we'll see you guys in a few. I'm Julia Pastel. This is the Colin McEnroe Show. We're talking today about the understudy, the standby, the fill-in, the backup. After a quick break, we'll talk to Audrey Levine, a performer who's covered roles in some legendary Broadway productions as an understudy and a swing. So we'll get into what that means after the break. I'm Julia Pastel, and this is the Colin McEnroe Show. Colin is out today because he was mauled by the last of the monarch butterflies, and we're not sure when he'll recover, so we're talking today about the role of the understudy, the standby, the fill-in, and the backup. I'm still joined by Danielle Doherty. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. Ready for more? Ready for more understudy geeking out?
Definitely.
Great. Well, she's the co-runner of the @understudies Twitter account, and she joins us from NPR Studios in New York. And we also have a new, absolutely expert understudy with us, Audrey Levine. Are you there with us, Audrey?
I am. I don't know how much of an expert I am.
Oh, compared to me, you are you're an expert. That's the standard. And you are a singer, an actress, a dancer, a performer all around. And on Broadway, you've been a swing, an understudy, and a standby for what I consider to be legendary productions.
Well, you just have to say the word Carrie and everybody's ears perk up, right?
Yes, absolutely. And with that tantalizing tease, we're just going to hang on a second because we wanted to start this segment with a clip from the web series Understudies. It's a really hilarious mockumentary about a woman who gets her big break. And this clip is from the first episode, which you can watch in its entirety at understudiestheshow.com.
Hey, Astoria, it's Clark.
Hey.
Yeah. Yeah, so listen, are you sitting down?
Sitting where?
No, I said, are you sitting down?
No, I'm making coffee.
Oh, I just wanted to check because I just heard that this actress, Astoria Bagg, just booked a part in the hottest Broadway show of the season, Twilight at Tiffany.
Really?
Yes.
Yes.
I know. Once in a lifetime, dream come true opportunity, Astoria.
Like, even though it's not a part, there are no lines or anything, and you don't actually go on stage night to night, just to be understudying a lead in a Broadway show, it's a dream come true.
And no, you're not just understudying Holly. Hold on. You're understudying Holly, Jemima, Goldie, and old Maud Levitson, the landlady.
Old Maud Levitson?
I know, which would be hilarious.
I love the character.
The play is Twilight at Tiffany's. It's a sort of vampire erotic version of the original Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Groundbreaking, first of all. Combining two franchises, it's like, yes, let's get fans of Audrey Hepburn, fans of Robert Pattinson. If they could have sex, I would want to see it. That's what we're paying for.
So, wow, that's got to be the worst sounding show of all time. Danielle, we started to get in the last segment into the lingo here. Can you explain the hierarchy of understudies, standbys, and swings? Who's who and how that all works?
Sure. So a standby is not on stage, but usually only covers one role or two roles. They have to be within a couple. Here on Broadway, they have to be a couple blocks within the theater until a certain time in the show when they're allowed to go home. Understudies are on stage every night, but also cover another role in the show. They also have their own track that they do. Swings are not on stage normally, but when they are covering other tracks, they can be on for those tracks and sometimes cover more than one track if they have a split track or something goes wrong.
Wow, awesome. So, Audrey, we're excited to have you because you have been all three of these things. Is that correct?
That's my dubious reputation, yeah.
So I would love to hear, you know, you've understudied for so many shows, and I mean, you're very accomplished everywhere. But your Broadway show resume in particular
is really sad. It's very sad.
I think it's wonderful. So if you could just take us through the few shows that you've been in and how they all turned out, that would be awesome.
Well, my very first Broadway show was called Mooney Shapiro Songbook, and it was the last musical to play the Marasco before it got torn down, which gives you a hint at my age. and I understudied Judy Kaye, and the interesting thing about that show, they made a really big deal about the fact that there were five major characters on stage, that they weren't wearing body mics, and this was a big deal. This show is not mic'd. But there were three understudies, and we spent the entire show in the pit singing along, doubling the show, so we actually were the mics. so that was my first understudy job.
And how many performances did that show last?
We closed opening night.
Okay, so next on my list here, I have Rags.
Oh, that was a bunch of years later and some other swing and understudy stuff in between. But yeah, Rags, I think was probably one of my most special experiences. I understudied Teresa Stratus, who was the lead, and I also had a small part in the show, and a lot of my scenes were with her, so I really got an up close and personal perspective of her work, and also just found her so incredible to work with. I loved that show, I really did.
Awesome.
And no, I did not go on. We also closed quite early after a long tryout in Boston and a few weeks previews in New York, and that one closed right away too.
And then you were doing all kinds of other shows off or on non-Broadway stuff. And then here we have the legendary 1998 Carrie. you were in Carrie, or you were a standby for Carrie. So please tell us all about
that. I was in the back of the house for Carrie. I was, I don't know if you recall, Carrie was a co-production with a Broadway producer and the Royal Shakespeare Company in Stratford-upon-Avon.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds so pretentious.
Incredible.
Stratford-upon-Avon. and it started... The first part of the production was done in England, and then it was going to move to Broadway. The deal being that half of the cast had to be British, half had to be American. Same with the crew, same with the designers. The unions really kind of worked out this real 50-50 thing. And Barbara Cook was playing the part of the mother. And once they started in previews in England, she wasn't really happy, and it wasn't really working out, and she made it clear that she did not want to go to Broadway with the show. I was doing regional theater at the time and got called in because at that time they were courting Betty Buckley to do it on Broadway, and I got called in as standby because they thought I could cover for either of them.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I didn't go on because I know that's going to be the question we're going to get to anyway. But, so I had a wonderful, wonderful time in England with Barbara, and a short but wonderful time with Betty in New York.
And why do you think, I mean, Carrie is, for real Broadway nerds, just a legendary, and I say this with absolute love, flop. So you got to watch all this go down. So what do you think happened? What was that like?
I have my theories.
Yes, let's hear it.
When we came back to New York, the director who viewed Carrie as a Jacobean tragedy as opposed to a high school musical, you know, about kids in high school, told us all the things he wanted to fix, and they were all the right things. But he didn't do it. He locked himself in a room with Betty and just rehearsed and left everyone else kind of wondering what was going to happen. Debbie Allen was the choreographer on the show, and whether or not you liked her work, she was an amazing spirit and really kept the morale of the company up and kind of kept them rehearsing whatever they could. But the changes didn't really happen. I, a little naughty little story, I'm a knitter, and I always knit during rehearsals. It helps me to concentrate. And when I would be sitting in Betty's rehearsals, I would be knitting. I don't have to look at what I'm doing, so I was watching and listening. And the stage manager came over and whispered in my ear that, you know, Miss Buckley thinks that if you're going to be knitting in rehearsals, you're not really paying attention, so she doesn't want you in here anymore.
Oh.
Now, this makes it sound like she was horrible. She was wonderful to me. She really was lovely, but this was just a thing that happened. So I had to watch the show from the back of the house every night. I stood there with the press agent and not only watch the show every night to track any changes in any script changes or blocking changes, but also to watch the audience.
Ah.
And sometimes I would be on the number 10 bus on the way home, and I'd see someone carrying the playbill, and I'd say, well, what'd you think? Not letting on that I was involved. And I remember one couple in particular that said, oh, we just came to laugh because our friends told us this was so horrible. And we really liked it, so we came back without them so we could enjoy it.
Wow, that's
so
fascinating.
You know, one night we thought, okay, this is going to work, and the next night it was like, oh, my God, this is the worst thing ever. and you just didn't know. But it really was two different shows. There was the crazy, funky, horribly designed, trashy dancing and these beautiful young kids just being crazy kids, and then there was the tragic story of the mother and the daughter, and it's like they were two different plays, and they never really met in the middle. One of the things that struck me, and again, this is just my take on it, I think that in a story like that, you know, the kids are laughing at Carrie and making fun of her. If you're allowed to laugh in the beginning, then you get the punch of feeling for her later. It's like, oh, I shouldn't have been laughing at her. This is a really sad story. But anything that got a laugh got cut.
Hmm.
He didn't want anyone to laugh at his darling little Carrie, and she was darling. She was absolutely fabulous, 16-year-old Lindsay Haley.
Wow.
So, look at how much humor is in Stephen King's work, but no laughs. And I think that was part of why it was so tragic.
Yeah,
she had
wow.
nowhere to go.
Well, it sounds like you've given this a lot of thought since
probably a lot more
the 80s. One thing that's really interesting to me about your story is that it almost feels like the job of being a Broadway performer becomes so different because most of the work ends up being in the rehearsal room or from the back of the house, as you say. I imagine that's rewarding in its own way. It's more about doing the work than performing a role for the public audience.
It's different. There is the challenge of being prepared and rehearsing, sometimes rehearsing in a vacuum. When a show runs for a while, then there is an opportunity for understudies to rehearse with other understudies and other company members and really get a feel of being a part of the company on stage. But a lot of it is just done in your own head or in your own living room or coaching with the musical director one-on-one. And I think the hardest part is when you're thrown in with all those other bodies for the first time. Although in my experience, except for one experience, usually the company is incredibly supportive and almost excited when an understudy goes on. They really want them to do well, one, because they want them to do well, and they're excited that they have the opportunity. But also, they don't want their show messed up. So, it's like, all right, if you blow this entrance, then I can't make my quick change. So it's good if it goes well for everybody.
It's such a positive way to practice change and surprise and all that good stuff that makes live theater exciting.
And I heard a little bit. I'm sorry I didn't hear the whole beginning of the first segment, again, what happens backstage is sometimes the biggest shock. You can know all your lines and all your blocking and all your harmonies and your dance steps, but unless you've really rehearsed having to do a complete wig and costume change in 15 seconds, that is probably the scariest part of the whole event.
Sure. You don't want to kick over Carrie's bucket of pig blood by accident and ruin the
made
prop.
With Cairo syrup.
Well, I hope it wouldn't be real.
And it was just a real. Can I say the word bitch? It was a bitch to get out of the clothes for the wardrobe department every night after the show.
Well, I have no idea if you're allowed to say that, but you did.
I did.
So one last question before we go to our next break. So Danielle kindly told us all about swings and. You have been a swing before, and you told us about a story. You were in Nonsense, and just tell us how you memorized so many different tracks, so many different parts.
Well, we were referred to as the Nunderstudies, and there are five characters in that show, and you covered all five of them. And I'm a pretty ADD, and I'm very visual, and I color-coded the show. So every nun was a different color, and I had a colored folder, and the script highlighted in that color, and the choreography marked, and the harmonies marked, so that if I knew I had to go on for a particular nun, I would just, grab the blue folder for Robert Ann, grab the pink folder for Hubert, that's how I got through it. Because they're so similar, because that was such a silly, fun, silly show, and it's very, you're just doing a simple little box step, but you're doing it in position two, or you're doing it in position four, or you're turning to the left, or you're turning to the right. And I actually did go on for four of the five parts.
Oh, that's amazing. And I think one thing I didn't really realize until we were researching this show is that not only are you changing your dance steps, you're changing your vocal part, because you got to have all those harmonies covered.
Yeah, who's on top here? Who's singing alto? Who's singing melody? Yeah.
Wow. Well, that is so cool. Thank you so much for talking with us, Audrey.
It's been fun.
And thank you, Danielle, for continuing to provide context. And we're going to get back to you. We're going to let Audrey go. I'm Julia Pistel. This is the Colin McEnroe Show. And we're talking about what it's like to understudy to prepare for a role you may or may not ever get to play. When we come back, we'll talk to Elizabeth Nearing from the Long Wharf Theater in New Haven. She's not an actress, but she has a great story. And we'll take your calls at 860-275-7266. Please tell us your stories about filling in at the last minute. Tom Brady, call us. Lyndon B. Johnson, call us. Substitute teachers, call us at 860-275-7266 after this quick break. Hi, I am Julia Pistel, and this is the Colin McEnroe Show. Colin's out today because he got a horrifying paper cut, and he could be gone for months. So we're talking today about the logistics and psychology behind the life of an understudy. So today's show was produced by Jonathan McNichol. Betsy Kaplan is running the board, and Katie Tularski is answering the phones, and she also happens to be our executive producer. Greg Hill is our tweet master. You can tweet him and us and such at WNPR Colin. We're also on Facebook, and we have a webpage at WNPR.org/Colin. The part of Bill Curry today was played by Joe Biden, who was called out, so the part of Joe Biden was played by me. What I'm saying is, I'm Bill Curry. Okay, so we are still here with Danielle Doherty, but first we're going to go right to the Nearing story. So Elizabeth Nearing is a community relations manager at Long Wharf Theater in New Haven. She's not an actress. Let me just emphasize that point here. She is not an actress. She went to school for directing, and she started at the Long Wharf as a resident, their term for interns, assistant directing their productions. But the Long Wharf doesn't use understudies, and, well, she got called in 2013. Let's hear the story.
So since I was out of town, I jumped on Metro North and memorized the lines on the train on the way back. And there was a snowstorm, and I had some trouble getting home. And I was up all night memorizing and had, like, fittings and stuff first thing, and then was on stage the next night. It was just, I found out, and then 24 hours later, I was on stage to a full house of people in a show with an abundance of, you know, moving parts and costume changes and some key timing.
Could you just describe the moment where you first found yourself on stage?
I think I, like, whited out. Like, I think it just was, like, autopilot. There was this, there was so much adrenaline. And so I think the actual going through the motions of the show, I almost feel like I didn't do anything. I just sort of went through the motions and everyone else on stage helped guide me. I mean, there's just incredible support of those people. What I do remember is the moment at the curtain call when I realized I had done it. I was like, oh, it happened. I did it. But I think the first moment on stage, I think I just was too nervous to even know where my body was. But it goes on autopilot, I think.
That's amazing. So how long did you perform for?
For a week. I was on for six shows, I think. It was Wednesday through Sunday.
So do you think that you would have found yourself acting on stage at all in that portion of your life had you not been thrown into this role?
I don't think so. Not at all. I had sort of, in high school, I wanted to act, but I had decided at like 15 that directing was the thing I wanted to do. I only ever did little projects for fun here and there. So I never would have predicted or expected or anticipated that being something that I jumped into.
All right. So sometimes you can be an understudy without even knowing it. So Danielle, can you talk to us a little bit about what you think is the emotional challenges of being an understudy? I mean, it can be really thrilling, or it can be really difficult, or really, as we were saying earlier, emotionally difficult because the audience is sometimes against you or at least very wary.
Absolutely. I think it's two big emotions, being excited that you're going to go on and also being worried, what will the audience think? Because depending on who you're understudying, you could hear boos as you're about to get on stage. So just being confident in your craft and how well you know the role and your cast being around you is an important thing. It's a feat.
Have you ever seen someone boo an understudy?
I have heard people boo understudy sometimes when the understudy is quite or when the lead actor is quite quite famous and the understudy goes on for them. But I mean, most understudies on Broadway are there because they are absolutely amazing. I know the story from London recently. The star of A Funny Girl over there, Sheridan Smith, had some family issues and had to pull out of the production for a time. And people were very angry that her understudy, Natasha Barnes, was on. And I heard crazy stories about people booing. But after she went on, there were so much media about how amazing she was. And she ended up performing that role for a couple months. And I saw her in the role, and she was absolutely amazing.
Wow, awesome. So we have a call here from a friend of ours, Carolyn. I'm just going to put her on the line. Carolyn, are you with us?
Hey, Julia.
Oh, my God. Yet another person I haven't hung up on. This is a wild success. So Carolyn called in to tell us about feeling like you're not the first choice. Can you tell us your story, Carolyn?
Yeah. Well, I've never actually been cast as an understudy. I have been cast as a second choice, which is arguably sometimes worse than an understudy, because when you're an understudy, the expectations and situation it's clear. You know that you may never get to perform the role. You know you're working what you're working towards. But if you get cast in, for example, I've been cast in a commercial, and you're not told in the upfront that, oh, you were our second choice. You find out kind of, it's like you put it together by the fact that, oh, I was called like the day before. You notice when you get to set that wardrobe has someone else's name on it and it's crossed out and now it says yours. The call sheet will have something else that they've changed. So you know that you were a second choice. So it's kind of like, it's like winning the beauty pageant and, you know, and then they step back and you get to take the crown as the runner up. And you're happy, but at the same time you realize like, huh, I almost didn't get this. So I think in some ways it feels sometimes worse than just being the understudy or not getting it at all. Not like I'm not happy to get the work.
Yeah, I mean, I think Danielle, though, can probably tell us a whole bunch of stories of understudies who ended up being more famous than the people they were understudying. Is that true, Danielle? Have there been breakout understudies?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton. Sutton Foster, who's the star of the TV show Younger, was originally an understudy in the production of Thoroughly Modern Millie. And the lead actress had to pull out for whatever reason, and she became the star, and she actually won a Tony Award for it. And other countless actors have started out as understudies. Colin Donnell, who's on the show Chicago Med, I think it is. Megan Hilty, as I mentioned before. Lots of really prominent actors get their start as understudies or going up, filling the ranks,
as
it
were, in theater. And that's the thing. When you're a performer, you're hungry for all the opportunities. So it's still a great opportunity. But there is that one moment on set where you realize how close you were to not having that opportunity. And you find that moment of finding it out that way can sometimes be a little jarring. And it becomes, for me, sometimes I have to say, all right, well, you're here now and that's all that matters. But there is that moment where you begin to question, well, who turned this down and why did they turn this down, or, you know, what happened?
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The neurotic performer in you comes out.
Well, yeah, and I have this quote here. There was an interesting New Yorker article recently about understudies because of all the amazing Hamilton understudies there are. And this is a quote from Bebe Neuwirth, who for theater geeks is very famous. So she said, "I could feel these waves of hatred coming off of the audience when she was a standby for Sweet Charity," which is such an intense image. But then you get to be Bebe Neuwirth. So, you know, it can work out. It can work out. You just hope that you never find out that you were someone's second, third, or last choice.
Right. Yeah, that's what you wonder. How many choices down the line was I?
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Carolyn.
Of course.
It's too real. It's too raw.
Yeah.
Talk to you later.
I just came back from filming in California, where I'm pretty sure it was not a second choice. So.
Oh, perfect.
Okay with that.
Good. All right. Thanks.
All right. Bye.
So, Danielle, we have just a couple minutes left. So, I would like to hear about this. You put up an Instagram, I think, of a guy who's understudying for Cats. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I think you're talking about Aaron Albano.
I am talking about Aaron. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us all about what he's up to now? This is a brand new production of Cats, and I'm just so delighted by this understudying role.
Well, we've known Aaron for a while. Aaron was an understudy back in Newsies, Allegiance. He's understudied in quite a few Broadway shows, but he's a swing in Cats, which just started and is selling out like crazy. But he covers almost all the Cats, so having to know all of those roles is insane, and including the fact that they have to do their own makeup. So him having to know the makeup plots is something else entirely.
Wow, awesome. Yeah, I saw on his Instagram that he has to have shoes that are painted for like 14 different little paws. So that's adorable.
Absolutely. And I don't think he's been on yet. But for some understudies that have to go on in previews, if something would happen, you don't even have your own costume yet. So you might have to be borrowing somebody else's costume.
Wow. Awesome. So tell us, this is your time. We only have a few minutes left. Like, who are your absolute favorite understudies working right now, and why are they awesome?
Oh, gosh. It's like picking a favorite child. I mean, I have a lot of incredible favorite understudies. One of my favorites is Andrew Chappelle, who's a swing in Hamilton. He has a ton of fans. He has his own little following. They call him the Beyonce of Broadway. But he is so funny and so talented. He covers all the men in the show, I think, but Hamilton. So he's fantastic. There are a lot of great ones in Hamilton. Javier Munoz, who was the standby for Lin-Manuel Miranda, mm-hmm. who just took over as Hamilton. He's fantastic. There are just so many good ones. I feel like I'm only saying Hamilton, but
yeah.
there are.
Well, that's, you know, that's expected at this point.
Yeah. Absolutely. And a show with such a following, really, there's fans for every person in the show. And with I feel like with our culture that's a little more obsessed with celebrity, especially now, that each and Twitter and things like that, each actor sort of has their own voice and can have an established social media presence and things like that. So they're really making names for themselves.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to take a quick phone call here from Mike. Mike, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
All right. So, Mike, tell us, you are the fourth person I have successfully not hung up on. I'm super proud of myself.
Congratulations. You're doing well.
Thank you.
In a couple of hours, you'll be a professional.
So tell us about your experience or your point of view on an understudy.
Well, you know, I'm sitting here listening to the show, great show, and I'm trying to, well, how do I relate to it? I've done plenty of theater, and I've never been an understudy. I've either gotten a role or went to the street. But then I've been on a lot of sports teams.
Mm.
And I'm not the best athlete. I'm not the worst. I can play. So I found myself being an understudy on every position of every team I was ever on because waiting for a position, waiting for something to open up so I can come in and fill in and show them that I could play or to fulfill that position and take it over from somebody.
Sure. Yeah, it's so interesting because we don't think of sports and theater in the same realm. You know, in high school movies, they're enemies, but it is the exact same spirit of you're a team and you're just going to jump in when that spotlight hits you, right?
Whenever I can help the team or whenever, you know, the team needs me or somebody's sick or something like that and you fill in. And, you know, that's, you know, the really good teams. I've been on other teams where, hey, everybody was just as bad as me and we had fun.
Well, Mike, thank you so much. That is such an interesting perspective. And we really appreciate you calling
in. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. All right, Danielle, we are out of time. Oh, no. What was that sound? he's still on. Okay, so Danielle, tell us about the concerts.
So we've had about 6 concerts so far called Half Hour. And what that is each actor will bring to us 2 songs. During the pre-show, our audience will pick which song they would like to hear the actor sing. And then our musical director will call the actor up. They'll tell us a little story about being an understudy. And then our music director will tell them what song the audience has selected for them to sing. And it's sort of a play on being ready at the last second to go on and know what you're doing and not knowing what you're going to sing or what exactly you're going to do until the moment before you do it, which happens a lot on Broadway.
Wow, that sounds like so much fun. You have been awesome. We're done. Thank you, Danielle. You are the best. And
did an amazing job.
We're going to follow you at understudies. You should tweet about this. I'm pretty
Absolutely,
sure.
definitely.
Awesome.
Well,
I made it. I made 2 mistakes, and I will leave it to the listeners to figure out exactly what they were. If you can figure it out, you can write to us or tweet us. And you know what? Don't send your reviews because that's the best part of being an understudy. You don't actually get to have to do that. So thank you so much to the whole gang here at WNPR for a really fun experience hearing about understudies on the Colin McEnroe Show.
Vernon, Danbury, Waterbury, Oliveberry, Woodbury, hitting on New Britain. Vernon, I already said that one. Avon, Farmington. Yeah, 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 yeah.